You're listening to the Takeaway Podcast. You can also find us on Twitter at The Takeaway and on Facebook at facebook.com/The Takeaway.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening and Happy New Year, everyone. I was planning to spend this day right here in the studio, but some of our favorite voices you may have heard from on our program all last year had different plans.
Let's party.
The economic year had its New Year's party on December 18th with Ben Bernanke's celebrated news conference where he announced the very gradual end of the Federal Reserve's controversial but financially addictive stimulus program.
As you know, we've been purchasing $85 billion per month in longer-term Treasury and agency mortgage-backed securities. Starting in January, we'll be purchasing $75 billion of securities a month.
The markets have been posting records since Ben's last stand, which is why our good friend Charlie Herman said that 2014 is already underway. And so when I spoke to him after Bernanke's news conference, he said there was no real point in working on New Year's Day.
I already popped the champagne and started the new year. I already started writing 2014 on my checks.
Okay. Is Todd Zwillick there? We often began our program last year with our Washington correspondent, and we expect to begin this hour with Todd in just a moment, right? Right, he'll be here.
Go, go, Todd Zwillick!
In the meantime, our good friend Manoush Zamarodi of the WNYC program New Tech City said that the 2014 tech story is already in the cloud.
The cloud will just be normal. We will stop talking about it because it's just going to be what we all come to expect all the time.
Manoush is downloadable from the cloud, but was happy to look ahead to 2014 without actually having to show up today at a somewhat, shall we say, retro terrestrial radio studio.
I'm ready to party with the best of them.
So I'm kind of like a senator or a congressman. New Year's Day, off. Although I don't have to go to any local New Year's Day fundraisers in my state or district. Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick is with me. So, Todd, what congressional district are you in as we speak?
John, I'm coming to you from the California 33rd, Culver City, the studios of NPR West. I'm out here visiting the family in Los Angeles.
And is that a Democrat, Republican district, safe district?
This is a safe Democratic district, the district of Congressman Henry Waxman, who's been in Congress for, I'm spitballing, 26 years, maybe 30?
That's very safe district, yes, indeed. And on Jan. 1, you will be back in Washington, D.C., awaiting the arrival of all the lawmakers who've been on a holiday break. Now, on a day like today, January 1st, what does a lawmaker who's up for reelection typically have to do as an obligation?
Well, let's be honest, like the rest of us, they're probably nursing a hangover, one or two of them, and that's okay. You're allowed to do that on New Year's Day. Maybe a New Year's Day parade in your town, and there are a lot of fundraisers on New Year's Eve, so probably counting a little bit of the war chest as well, I would imagine.
So New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, there will be obligatory community events, that sort of thing, which leads to the 2014 elections are really the main event for Congress, at least in terms of their sort of late year reality in 2014. What do we begin with, though, in terms of laws and what's on the sort of docket on Capitol Hill that the Democrats and Republicans will be getting to once they get back into session?
Very first thing you're going to start hearing about is unemployment insurance. Those benefits expired on December 28th for 1.3 million long-term unemployed who were getting benefits. Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, has promised that the very first vote in the Senate on January 5th or 6th, the day or the day after they come back, is going to be on a temporary extension, a retroactive extension of those unemployment benefits. That'll be the first thing out of the gate.
Now, does the election slow the agenda down? We often talk about how political pressure tends to make lawmakers more conservative or hesitant about taking bold positions. Or is there some incentive for lawmakers to be more productive in 2014 than they were in 2013?
Yeah, you say slow it down, and then, of course, you wonder, slow down from what?
First gear
to neutral, right? Because Congress has done so very little in the last year. There are some areas where there might be some incentive to try and get things done. You look at immigration, for instance. There are a lot of Republican operatives and wise men and women advising the leadership to get something done on immigration. Don't let the Democrats corner you on this issue the way they did in 2012 when Mitt Romney lost Hispanic voters by 38 points. That doesn't mean hoping that John Boehner and the House Republican leadership will be able to get their conservatives to come along to pass any immigration bill that involves some kind of pathway to citizenship. So we're looking out for that. In the shorter term, though, John, the president and Democrats have already signaled that they're going to be talking about middle class inequality going into the first part of the year. What does that mean? Unemployment benefits, the minimum wage, the price of student loans. Democrats want this discussion, which polls really, really high with lots of independents and lots of middle-class voters around the country. They want that to overshadow the difficulty they've had with Obamacare so far, which has got Democrats in the polling tank right now.
That discourse will certainly affect debate over the farm bill, which is mostly about food stamps. And what about cliffhangers and fiscal cliffs and government shutdowns on the horizon?
Well, government shutdowns seem to be something that are in the past, at least for now. For the next 2 years, that Ryan Murray budget deal takes government shutdowns off the table until a year from October. So, sigh of relief. I can't say the same for the debt limit. That debt limit deal they got back in October, John, it expires in mid-February. They have to face the debt limit again. You would have thought by this time, having tried it twice and failed, that Republicans would understand that the president isn't going to negotiate on the debt limit. They took a hit in the polls the last time they had this confrontation.
Finally, we've noted really in the past week that the momentum in favor of gay marriage around the United States is solidly pro-legalization of gay marriage, whether you're talking about the federal situation with the Defense of Marriage Act, which was struck down by the Supreme Court, or the current court battles in Utah right now, a traditionally conservative state. Will gay marriage be an election issue in 2014, Todd?
It's gone to the states, and it may well be in those individual states. Remember back in 2004 when John Kerry and George Bush were running? Gay marriage was on the ballot in several states. The public's attitude was different then than it is now, and it really hurt John Kerry. There might be a similar situation this time, and it might be the reverse. Not necessarily on ballots, but John, gay marriage is before the courts in nearly 20 states in cases at different levels of judicial review, just like it was in Utah in these last couple weeks when we got that surprise ruling. So outside of Washington, outside of the Beltway, where they've already done Defense of Marriage Act and Supreme Court rulings, gay marriage is in front of the courts. We're going to have decisions likely all year long that affect the national debate and national attitudes about this issue that's changing so very quickly.
Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick, Happy New Year, Todd.
And to you, John.
So from Washington, D.C. to the economy, Charlie Herman, business and economics editor for our partner WNYC, is with us. And as we've noted already, if 2014 really started with Ben Bernanke dropping the ball, so to speak, on the gradual end to the so-called quantitative easing program, dropping that New Year's ball not above Times Square, but above the global financial intersection of Exchange and Main Streets. Well, how is the year going so far, Charlie? The numbers are looking pretty good.
You know, we've got these revised numbers for how much the economy is growing for the third quarter. So this would be the quarter ending at the end of September. And they were much better than expected. It was 4.1%, which was up from the previous estimate, So there's really this sense of momentum going forward that the economy might actually take off. Now, there's a little bit of worry that, you know, the last 3 months, retail spending during Christmas season may not be that great. But what we're seeing here is this escape velocity people talk about, that maybe we're getting into it and the economy can really take off. You got a Congress that maybe is actually working together a little bit, so maybe they can get out of the way of hurting the economy. So we're poised to actually maybe see some growth next year.
Todd Zwillick's comments notwithstanding.
Exactly.
But the durable goods was positive, and we're going to maybe see some positive number in the jobs.
Yeah, you know, the big question here is going to be confidence. Do consumers start to feel more confident because they're seeing really consistent jobs numbers coming out, that they see the unemployment number going down? Do businesses begin to feel more confident and decide we're going to spend more and we're going to hire more? So even if the economy starts to do well, people have to start feeling better, and then that can start creating this sort of virtuous circle of they spend, businesses get the money, they hire, people get hired, they spend, wages start to go up, we start seeing this change.
All right. So what do you make of what Todd Zwillick was just talking about in terms of the income inequality is going to be part of the Democrats' attempt to really message 2014 in political terms? What does that mean economically speaking as we look out towards, the summer and the fall?
I think this really is going to be a big issue. I mean, you have this issue with a lot of people who are unemployed – who have not been able to get jobs, who are stepping out of the workforce because they just can't find work. You have unemployment benefits, which are coming to an end. And, you know, some economists have found that when people lose their benefits, they just stop looking for work altogether, because you can only get those benefits if you're looking for work. And if you're looking for work, you're counted as unemployed. So if people are losing skills, if they're losing benefits, if they're leaving the workforce, you have these studies that have come out that have looked at the jobs that have been created since the recession, and about half of them are in low-paying jobs. So you're just really seeing this bifurcation, and politicians are talking a lot about it. You look at what's happening here in New York City. The new mayor was elected in large part and talking about this, a tale of two cities. So I think this will continue to be an issue. We're having the minimum wage go up in about 13 states. It's only going to just sort of keep adding fuel to this fire of how much people are making. Should they be making more?
So do you think the takeaway in 2014 is that we will see the implications of the structural changes that took place in the economy when the meltdown happened in 2008? We're going to really see those changes in stark human terms because of who gets left behind and who actually is part of the recovery.
And who's getting a job and what they're getting paid at. I think there'll be a lot more attention paid to that issue, especially going into an election year where politicians are really going to want to make hay of the fact that, yeah, jobs are being created, but they're not paying like they used to pay, or they're in the service sector sort of jobs and people can't support themselves very well. I think that that will be a potent issue that politicians will want to talk about. But whether or not actually anything is done to try and resolve it is a bigger question about what is the role of government in trying to help people have middle class lives, get above the poverty level.
Yeah. But the wild card is something happens in Brazil, the price of oil, or Europe goes south again.
Europe or China, or there's always going to be some sort of other thing that's out there. But at least for right now, the conditions appear to be for economic growth. The conditions appear to be that more jobs are being created. And the hope there is that as the economy does better, that wages will start to improve and maybe people will actually start seeing their incomes go up more than they have in the past. And maybe that will help address some of these worries about income inequality.
Charlie Herman, business and economics editor for our producing partner, WNYC, from the perspective of well into 2014, economically speaking. Charlie, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
We got the whole year ahead of us, 2014, so we're asking you, is there something you're looking forward to this year? Amy in Massachusetts, starting law school. And she writes, I hope. Beaufort in Michigan, no more 2013. It's been a bad year. Okay, it's out of here. Robert Flood in Allen, Texas, I'm looking forward to this nation's end to medical discrimination when it comes to cancer survivors like myself, being able to purchase all types of health insurance and not being denied. Here in Texas, anyone with a pre-existing condition is charged 200% to 400% above the highest priced health insurance. Good luck to you, Robert, in Allen, Texas. Tell us, what are you looking forward to in 2014?
Hey, this is Mitch from South Carolina. I'm turning 50 this year. I'm expecting to go back to grad school and start a new career upon completion. So barring an unforeseen catastrophe, I think the best is yet to come for me. I say bring it on.
Post something on our Facebook page or call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Coming up, new music on the horizon in 2014. In a moment, this is The Takeaway. You know, one of the best places to go hunt up the future around this place, WNYC, our partner station, is to go to the office of John Schaefer, host of music programs Soundcheck and New Sounds. Schaefer's desk is always piled high with new music, concert announcements, concert bootlegs, and demos of new artists. So when he stopped by our studio with his list of new sounds to watch for in 2014, it was clear, first of all, that he had access to hot tickets for some New Year's Day performances, and that 2014 was looking to be a very good year from his perspective. And we were the first to wish him a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, John.
It's great to have you here. And you know, we got some music to play, stuff that you know about, but the rest of us will have to wait till this year to hear. But I love the preview. But we should really begin with a business story, a kind of a platform story, and that is
big business, the arrival, finally, of Google's much-delayed YouTube music service. YouTube is already the number one music spot anywhere in the world.
No, my kids listen to music on YouTube.
Yeah. So this could be a game changer, or it could just muddy the waters beyond repair. You know, this is a very crowded market. You've got Pandora and Spotify and RDO and iHeartRadio and so many others. And there are several others coming, including a couple from Europe this year as well. But Google's YouTube Music service is the big one. It's been delayed a number of times. It was supposed to have happened in the middle of last year and then towards the end of last year. So let's see what 2014 brings.
Musicians like yourself terrified by this prospect, or does it open a brand new world for all musicians?
I think this is the big question, is we're just not sure. They're making all the right noises about actually paying slightly more royalties to the musicians, which would be great. Mm-hmm. But slightly more than infinitesimal is just slightly less infinitesimal.
Right. Well, you know, the guitarist and a large pepperoni pizza, they both can feed – one can feed a family of four, and it's not the guitarist, right? So let's talk about the artists that you're really looking forward to here.
Well, one is the return of Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, this wonderfully funky kind of neo-James Brown band from Brooklyn. Sharon Jones is a great story. She was a corrections officer in the New York City prison system. Mm-hmm. Didn't really begin making records till she was in her 50s. And in the spring of 2013 was diagnosed with cancer, bile duct cancer. So she underwent treatment, and they are now coming back. They've made a new record called Give the People What They Want. And there's a song called Retreat, which you can find on the internet, and which gives us an idea of what a healthy Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings sound like.
The track to look for is
Retreat.
All right, certainly something to look forward to there. A lot of people anticipate Springsteen.
Yes, and Springsteen is going to release High Hopes, which is a collection of curios, covers, songs he's done live but has never put on LP, a couple of things that have been released.
Does he need to pay some bills, or is this an artistic milestone? What do you think?
I think what happened here is Bruce Springsteen fell in with Tom Morello, who most people will know as the guitarist from Rage Against the Machine.
Very strongly
political band. Tom Morello was very active in the Occupy movement. And Springsteen started playing songs with Morello and just got really inspired to go back and make recordings of songs that he hadn't done proper recordings of before. So the idea of this coming together of Springsteen and Morello has really – Morello's not on all of the songs on the forthcoming record. He's on about half of them, though. And that really seems to have been the impetus for this new record.
All right. So the collaboration is one piece. The fact that it's covers, I noticed that one track on here is called High Hopes. That can't possibly be the High Hopes that I'm thinking of, is it?
No.
Give me love. Give me peace. Don't you know these days you pay for everything? Got high hopes. I got high hopes.
Is that a cover?
That is a cover. It's a rather obscure one, a band from about 30 years ago in California. High Hopes is the title track of this forthcoming Springsteen record. There are several covers, most of them not very familiar. And as I say, things that he has done that people will know, his song about the shooting of Amadou Diallo in New York City, for example, 41 shots, that is going to be on this new record.
Definitely
as well.
Something to look forward to. Yeah. All right. So what about in the smaller ego category?
Yeah, I am really looking forward to the return of a young Australian singer and songwriter named Courtney Barnett, who in 2013 released a pair of EPs. She made a couple of low-key appearances last spring that were very well received. And I think she is just too talented and too quirky a songwriter to be ignored. She's coming back to the States in February. And to give you an idea of the kind of songwriting I'm talking about, she has a song called Avant Gardener.
Let's hear it. There's a real story here. Tell us.
She's attempting to do a bit of gardening and instead is having a serious allergic reaction to the point that the ambulance has to come and take her away. Best lyric of 2013, the paramedic thinks I'm clever because I play guitar. I think she's clever because she stops people dying.
That's pretty good.
Yeah,
so, I have to say.
Yeah, so I am really looking forward to Courtney Barnett and her band, the Courtney Barnetts, coming to the States in February.
So from Google to the Barnetts.
Yes.
It's going to be quite a year. John Schaefer, thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
It's 2014, In With the New. You've been sharing your thoughts about what you're most looking forward to this year. Kimberly in Michigan. I'm looking forward to more FaceTime with my family. She talking about FaceTime the app or actual visits? Sort of two meanings there. Katie in New York writes, I'm excited about taking comedy classes at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater and Training Center, getting a job, turning 24, and, of course, listening to The Takeaway. Well, Katie, you're already making us smile. If it sounds like a great year to you, tell us what's on your calendar for 2014. Write to us at facebook.com/thetakeaway or call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Coming up, our movie date team gives us a look at the big and the small screen in the year ahead. In a moment, this is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by Lumosity.com, the brain training program designed by neuroscientists and used by 50 million people, created to improve memory and attention. More at Lumosity.com.
Dad, are any of these movies good?
Worst episode ever.
I see a lot of films. I love all of them.
Your job is to rate movies on a scale from good to excellent.
Hated it.
So normally we look back at the movies that like are either opening at the moment or have just come out and get reviewed by our Rafer Guzman, film critic for Newsday and co-host of the Movie Date podcast, and Kristen Meinzer, culture producer for The Takeaway, also of the Movie Date podcast. But today we're going to look ahead, right?
There's a lot to look forward to.
Yeah. And because you guys get all like the hot lists of everything that's in production and is going to happen, you guys are the wizards on all of this, right, Rafer?
We're plugged in.
Totally plugged in.
We're wired.
Both of you have lists of what you're really, really anticipating. Why don't give us your list, and then we've got some examples. Rafer?
Well, I'd say one of my first movies I'm looking forward to is Noah. You don't see biblical epics that much anymore, but here we have one. It's the story of Noah and his ark.
All right.
I'm also looking forward to the Lego movie, animated film about that takes place in the Lego universe.
And that pretty much establishes the spectrum of your interests.
That's right.
The Bible and Legos. How about you, Kristen?
I'm obviously looking forward to The Muppets Most Wanted. I love all things Muppets. This one has Ricky Gervais and Christoph Waltz, two of my very favorite actors. Flight of the Conchords are back also. So I'm really looking forward to that. And also, I'm really excited about the 2014 action movies. A sequel to Captain America. Loved the original. The new one's called Captain America, The Winter Soldier. 22 Jump Street, the sequel to 21 Jump Street. And finally, the sequel to The Hunger Games, Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1. That's the third of four movies.
They're not going to extend it like The Hobbit did into three, right? Mockingjay will be two installments, kind of a Harry Potter trick.
Right? Yes, worked. Absolutely.
It absolutely worked. Okay, so those are your lists. Let's start with Noah here.
My father said that one day, if man continued in his ways, the Creator would annihilate this world.
Cannot be averted.
He speaks to you. You must trust that he speaks in a way that you can understand.
So, Rafer, is this a throwback to the Charlton Heston days, or is it kind of a Lord of the Ringing of the Bible?
I think it's more Lord of the Rings style. Apparently, there's a lot of fantasy elements in this. I think it sounds pretty interesting, and I love Darren Aronofsky, the director.
All right. Let's move to Legos. I've actually seen the Lego trailer, and
yes,
my kids are wild for it, even my teenagers.
My fellow master builders, we have learned that Lord Business plans to end the world as we know it. There is yet one hope. The special has arisen.
I think I got it, but just in case, tell me the whole thing again. I wasn't listening.
I recognize Morgan Freeman there. How can this possibly work, a Lego movie?
You know, I don't know, but I think the trailers look pretty good. My one complaint about this is that it's not actually stop motion, which I would have really loved if it had been real stop motion Legos. It is computer animation meant to look like Legos.
picky.
But I still think it looks funny, and I also think it could be the first movie that I take my five-year-old to. He's very sensitive, and I think this movie could perhaps draw him in. This could
Legos,
be his first.
Legos are the window on Hollywood
exactly.
For your little one. All right, so the Muppet movie has Ricky Gervais and Tina Fey, if I'm not mistaken.
The world's greatest criminal has stolen the greatest treasures, escaped the greatest prisons, and he bears a strong resemblance to someone you know.
It's not easy being mean.
Last Muppet remake did really, really well.
It did terrifically well. Yeah. That was Amy Adams. It was Jason Segel. It was, of course, our wonderful Kermit and Miss Piggy. This one, we have a whole new cast of celebrity cameos, which will be great. Like you just said, Tina Fey's in it. We also have Ray Liotta, Danny Trejo, all sorts of unexpected names. And those are half the fun of these movies, just seeing where these big names pop up and what kinds of roles they have.
Half the fun and double the pleasure. Two Kermits, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Well, I can't tell you that.
They're completely plugged in and dialed in to the backstory of all the movies coming out this next year. Kristen Meinzer, culture producer for The Takeaway, Rafer Guzman, film critic for Newsday, and co-host of the Movie Date podcast. Thanks so much, and good movies to you.
Thank you. Thank good you, movies John. To you, too.
Rafer and Kristen, regarding the small screen, there's more and more of a mixing of Hollywood releases and Hollywood investments and television investments and the opportunities and platforms for television viewing, right, Rafer?
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I think you see certainly stars crossing back and forth in a way they never used to do. I think the small screen used to be the place that you started out and the big screen was where you wanted to end up. Now, I think if it's not the other way around, I think they've at least achieved some kind of parity. You'll see people go from a movie to a series easily.
One of my 15-year-old's acting teachers said there has never been a better moment for opportunities for people to act in film and television together because of all these platforms out there. You're the TV addict on our staff, Kristen.
Oh, I love TV. I think it's a very special time in TV. It's a golden era. Much more great writing than we've seen in decades. We have fantastic acting. We have people represented on the small screen that we don't see nearly as much on the big screen. People of color, people with disabilities, women in all sorts of roles that just aren't out there in Hollywood in the same way.
And what are you looking forward to?
One is being rumored to possibly be the next Girls. It's called Looking. It takes place in San Francisco. It's a gay young man out in the world living his life.
What's wrong with having a life outside of work? This is San Francisco. That's why I live here. If I didn't want to have a life, I'd move to L.A.
And I need to find a roommate.
Oh, really?
Yes.
On OKCupid.
This will work as ensemble. I mean, if Girls worked, there's any number of possibilities here.
Oh, absolutely. I think a lot of people are looking forward to seeing if Looking is going to be as good as Girls, if it's going to be as edgy. No doubt it'll be smart. Most of the HBO shows are really well written, so I think it'll be a good bet.
You know where HBO is on your television, right, Rafer?
I do indeed.
And True Detective is your preferred or the thing you're most anticipating in the coming year?
True Detective, yes, partly because this stars two movie stars. Those are the stars I like to watch. Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson play a couple of detectives. It's an anthology mystery series. Matthew McConaughey starred in a film a little bit like this called The Lincoln Lawyer a couple years ago that I really liked. This looks a little bit like that, so it could have some appeal.
And with the Catching Fire, Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey have both had good movie years. Let's see how they do on TV.
You ever see something like this?
No, sir.
Now look, me talking about what happened back then, that ain't gonna do you any good now.
There might be some connection. Whatever you can tell us.
Yeah, let me see what you got. Yeah, I have my memory.
Very HBO, but
yes.
Even more noir than usual.
Yes, sounds very dark. Of course, you know, when Woody Harrelson's involved, things tend to get a little carried away.
Lifetime movies, Lizzie Borden Took an Axe, that premieres in January. Tell me about that.
Well, I just want to start all of this. I can see the look on your face, John. Lifetime movie, yes. Lifetime movie is not what it used to be. A lot of big stars are doing Lifetime movies, so that's Christina Ricci and Lizzie Borden.
Lifetime used to be the L word, right? Didn't they do the L word
They've
series?
Done all sorts of great things. Right. And then Flowers in the Attic is another one that's coming out on Lifetime, which I'm looking forward to. But Lizzie Borden, one of the reasons I'm looking forward to it, I haven't seen a lot of Christina Ricci lately. I think she's a great actor. And I think Lizzie Borden is just one of those mysteries that a lot of us have always been fascinated with.
And the Flowers in the Attic project, though, what's that about? Remind us.
So anybody who came of age in the 80s or 90s who was a girl probably read these tawdry novels about kids being locked in the attic by their mean mom and what happened up in the attic. And so those of us who came of age with those books are looking forward to seeing how is this going to be adapted to the small screen, knowing how perverted and weird it all is.
Mm-hmm. And an offering from Will Ferrell and Funny or Die before we go.
That's right. The Spoils of Babylon. It's a parody of the epic TV miniseries from the 80s. Pretty good cast of Ferrell, Jessica Alba, Val Kilmer, Tobey Maguire. I liked Will Ferrell in Casa de mi Padre. He knows how to send up a genre for sure. So it'll be interesting to see what he does with this.
And it seems like everybody wants to be in Will Ferrell's Vanity Project. He calls, everybody comes.
Yes, indeed.
Rafer Guzman, film critic for Newsday. Kristen Meinzer, culture producer for The Takeaway. TV in the coming year. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
In the tech world, time shifting has been the deal for years. There's live streamed, there's just streamed, there's downloadable, there's downloaded, and then there's YouTube, Vined, and just posted nearly live Snapchat. Is this really 2014 or just a download of the future from the past? This language distortion comes courtesy of the cloud, which is the digital domain of so much of our reality right now. Hey, two words for you, Edward Snowden. Those downloads from the NSA from the past are shaping the future of privacy as we speak and help to define 2013. In terms of technology, no one knows the cloud and its implications better than Manoush Zomorodi, host of the WNYC podcast New Tech City. Manoush, the cloud itself is not new, but in cultural terms, is 2014 the possible ultimate harmonic convergence of the cloud?
What I want to say is that the cloud will just be normal. We will stop talking about it because it's just going to be what we all come to expect all the time. We expect to be able to access our photo library. We expect to be able to access our documents, our email, everywhere we go. And maybe we'll stop shelling out for all that extra space, for all that extra capacity on our gadgets because we don't have to pay for it because we have everything in the cloud.
Don't buy stock in hard drive manufacturers. The cloud is going to basically be responsible for all the backups.
Well, you know, I say that and then I'm remembering this guy that we interviewed this year who now backs his stuff up in five different places after Hurricane Sandy did a number on his business. He has two hard drives, two separate cloud places, and then I don't know where the one I think he carries around with his backpack at all times. So you can't be too paranoid. But then the other thing, I mean, look, there's a couple other things. You need connectivity all the time for the cloud, and we're just not there yet. I mean, certain cities you could be. If you live in Chattanooga, I'm assuming that everyone is on the cloud at all times in Chattanooga or places like Kansas City where Google Fiber is.
Now, connectivity leads us directly to communication, and we're really starting to develop a kind of syntax of digital communication in our sharing of files and images. Explain.
I mean, I think what we're going to see this year is moving towards communicating with pictures more than anything. We now communicate in tiny little texts. We communicate on Twitter in 140 characters. But let's face it, the reason why the cliche, right? A picture's worth 1,000 words. Cliches are always true for a reason. And I think with some things like Instagram, which did incredibly well this year, there was a new number that came out from the Pew research that says that half of us who have been on the internet, half of us have posted original photos or videos to a website. So that means we're all getting more used to sharing pictures. We're getting used to telling stories with video. And I think Snapchat was one of the most interesting things that happened at the end
Snapchat.
Of the year. Yeah, they got offered to be bought by Facebook reportedly for $3 billion, and they said no.
And the innovation there is that it's a technology that allows pictures to sort of fade away, go away. It basically deals with the privacy question by sending images that have a perishability to them.
Let me give you an example. My nanny and I don't speak Spanish very well. Her English is... So how do we communicate? Pictures. How are the? You left your glasses. I send her a picture of her glasses on the bureau. How are the kids? The best way to know is to take a picture of them eating their snack after school, right? Do I need to save those photos? They're not like, you know, gorgeous pieces of creativity. They're information.
Communication leads directly to some of the rules and the questions of how we actually mediate this technology.
I think a year ago we were still talking about, should I do this or shouldn't I do this? the question, especially for parents, I think they're the people who maybe had to deal with it first because they didn't understand it, was how do you balance it? It's not an if or. It's how do we make it work with how we live? So a story that we did this year was about a summer camp that instead of taking away the gadgets for summer camp, they let them have them and be in a safe place to try to figure out how to live life and make friends in real life and also coexist with their gadgets and find some balance where they draw the line personally. I think that going forward, it's not saying no to technology. It's saying, where do I draw the line with technology?
And the bad news may feel like all parenting has become, you know, how do you enforce rules about digital objects? But the good news is the rules that are being made now are basically a cultural template for how we're going to move forward with all of this technology.
Yeah, that's
we're
pretty,
the guinea pigs.
Yeah, that's a big, big onus on us. This is definitely the generation that is coming up completely digital native, and you can't say no to them. You have to say how to them and help them learn. On the other hand, John, when you say that, I'm like, well, who knows what kind of technology we'll be using in 5 years? This is that word iteration. This is an iterative process. You figure out one thing. Then you move on. You got to figure out something else. It's just like kids, right? You got them figured out. 6 months later, they're a completely different person.
Sounds tough, but it would be great for the selfie generation to take a little responsibility if I can be an old geezer about all of this. Finally, will this be the year that health and health matters and health information really gets integrated into our technological lives and our technological platforms?
I mean, I'm sure over the last year, people saw more and more of their colleagues or friends wearing those bracelets on their wrists, right, that are tracking how many steps they're walking. That's mostly what we've seen. But I think what we're going to start to see are new kinds of wristbands that measure a lot more, that measure, are you very sweaty at certain times during the day? Is it because maybe you're not well? Or how many heartbeats per hour are you doing? Is that a sign of something?
And compiling that information.
Exactly. The next step is, what do we do with all the data that these wristbands are collecting? We talked to one office that gave these wristbands to all of their workers and then tracked them to see who slept the best in the office. Makes you a little uncomfortable because this should be private, right? But what we're going to
see, these
though, are the questions.
I do feel like if we get rid of some of the privacy questions, we can make more intelligent decisions about public health if the right people have the right information and it's not used against us. But that's something for another day.
I totally agree with you. But do you want your boss to be like, oh, John, I see you didn't sleep well last night. That really explains why you did such a crappy show, right? Like, nobody wants... Not that that would ever happen, John.
No,
but you know what I'm saying.
I get that memo every Tuesday. How did you find out about that?
Can I just tell you about one that's coming this year?
Sure.
It sounds so cool. It's called the Aero Wristband. It's supposed to launch in the fall. This is supposed to be able to use light waves to figure out how many calories you ate during the day and also how many of those calories were actually nutritious. I mean, Nirvana coming in 2014, right?
Can I exclude my boss from the list of people who gets that information?
Yes.
Just saying.
And can I take it out over Halloween? Take it off? I don't want to wear it over Halloween. I'll be embarrassed how much candy I eat.
Oh, that's so long from today, Halloween.
Right?
Yes, exactly. Well, have a great year.
You too.
Manu Zamarodi, host of the WNYC podcast, New Tech City, on Tech in the New Year.
The Takeaway is supported by Lumosity.com, the brain training program designed by neuroscientists and used by 50 million people, created to improve memory and attention. More at Lumosity.com.
And now we'll end this hour with a look at the sporting world, which has so many Americans' attention on New Year's Day, with the traditional Rose Bowl, Michigan State versus Stanford this year, and the impending college national championship games, Alabama versus Oklahoma, Clemson versus Ohio State, and the official BCS Bowl on January 6th between Florida State and Auburn. George Vesey is with us. He's contributing sports columnist with our partner, the New York Times. He's also the author of the forthcoming book, 8 World Cups, My Journey Through the Beauty and Dark Side of Soccer. When Vesey looks back, he sees a long way as a veteran reporter, but when he looks ahead to the new year, Vesey is looking far past the college bowls. George Vesey, welcome to The Takeaway.
Nice to be here.
Happy New Year and all that.
We will see.
Yes. Well, in a sort of public radio way, there's sort of an environmental theme to the beginning of the sports year in the sense that the NFL is going to be hoping that the winter is not bad for the Super Bowl in New York, while in Russia they're going to be hoping that the winter is really severe for the Winter Olympics.
Well, exactly. You know that I predicted a blizzard a couple of years ago when the NFL tempted fate and put the Super Bowl here. I thought it was hubris to begin with, and given the NFL, it is hubris. But they put it there in a cold weather. I'm sure it's going to be cold in January and February, so we have that to look forward to. But I did predict it. I'm saying that.
Economic opportunity for the NFL. They'll probably be selling personal heated skyboxes for people who go to the game to sit in.
Well, they need the money because they've got all these concussion suits coming up, class action and individual ones, for putting the concussions under the table, under the rug for so many years. And I think that in 2014, we're going to see the league really get hit by great stars are going to continue to come out and say, I haven't been feeling well since 1963 or something. And it's going to be nasty for the NFL.
So they are far from turning the corner on this one.
Oh, I think so, because every player, you know, you see the names of players. Craig Morton, I saw a few weeks ago, his name came out. And these are guys that haven't played in the league in decades. But, of course, that's plenty of time for any damage to sink in. And players who suspected that they were wounded are now have the piece of paper. I mean, 24 out of 25 brains that were cross-sectioned up in Harvard have come out to have that traumatic stress.
And in legal terms, you know, it's head, shoulders, knees, and toes. I mean, it's the whole body. And we haven't even gotten to knees yet.
Well, knees are just that's normal. But the brain concussion is something else. I mean, coaches used to say to players, just walk it off and whatever it was. And it wouldn't let the guys drink water. But the real thing was having your, quote, bell rung. You know, John Madden and all the broadcasters, until they got politically correct, they used to chortle and say, oh, looks like old so-and-so. He's got his bell rung. But now players are realizing why. I mean, I saw John Mackey. One of the smartest guys, a leader of the Players Association, knew him from when he was in high school. I saw him deteriorate from a really sharp guy, a leader, into someone who needed care till the end of his life. And that's multiplied by the great players you've seen.
Thinking about the Winter Olympics, assuming global warming doesn't get in the way, what are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm looking forward to I don't think that the Olympics are going to be able to hold back any athlete or fan or journalist who wants to bring up the gay issue while they're there. You know, somebody wearing a button, somebody wearing a pin, some policeman trying to take it away from them. What I do think will happen, probably the most graphic thing at the Winter Olympics, is that Putin is going to go out there and try and arrest people with gay buttons himself, probably with his shirt off in the middle of winter. I think you can safely predict that.
Or all the people dressed up as Putin in a dress who will be on the streets.
That sounds like fun.
Sounds like just the kind of antics we can expect.
Putin in a dress, exactly.
Well, we'll see about that. The World Cup in Brazil is in some ways a prelude for the Summer Olympics that will take place in Brazil, but the World Cup is even a bigger sporting event.
In my opinion, it is. As a soccer buff, I definitely think so. What's interesting to me is that in the last year, the people in Brazil who are so good-hearted, the nicest thing about that country is the people, they have identified the World Cup as part of their economic problem. Their country has been rented out as a television studio and a stadium for the next year, and they are starting to say, why do we have bad bus service, or why do we have this or that? And we can afford to build stadiums for FIFA and for these wealthy people.
And with the World Cup and the Olympics coming in, sports could actually produce something of an economic revolution in Brazil, if not South America.
Well, economic or certainly psychological. I mean, there's so much unrest in other parts of the country. They've seen it happen in the Middle East, not that it did a lot of good. But people in Brazil have certainly identified that if you think you're not getting good service, you go after the people who are spending their money in questionable ways. And a country that's the patrimony of soccer, of football, is now questioning the role of football in their lives. And that's a new occurrence.
Yankee baseball fans say goodbye to Robinson Cano. He goes out to Seattle and joins the Mariners. Will the Yankees be saying goodbye to Alex Rodriguez, depending on the outcome of all of this steroids controversy that dominated this year's headlines?
The Yankees would love to say goodbye to Alex Rodriguez. I mean, first of all, he's fallen apart, but they gave him that horrendous contract. I am just sure, and I can't prove this, so this is not a legal statement, but I am sure that somehow the Yankees are dropping a dime on Alex, all the way along trying to come up with information that would show that he is dirty. And it's baseball's ball to carry, so to speak, but I think the Yankees would be happy if he went away. I think ultimately he will get a year suspension from baseball, which will put him at, what, 40 when he comes back. And while he does do the work, I think he may not play much anymore.
What do you make of the NBA season? And one way of escaping any interest in the NBA is to be a fan of either of the New York teams right now. They're doing so poorly.
Well, I'm going to make a rash prediction here about the Knicks and the Nets. Now, this is admittedly a parochial thing from my hometown of New York, but I can safely predict that the Knicks and the Nets in Brooklyn will finish the season.
We'll finish the season. But the Pacers are really the story. I mean, they've vaulted ahead of all the other teams. We'll see where they are, you know, come the turn of the year. But the Indiana Pacers are a phenomenon.
Gee, who's working in Indiana right now? Would that be Donnie Walsh, the guy who couldn't get things done with the Dolan organization?
Ooh.
And then Donnie went back home to Indiana?
Ooh.
I think so.
And we should just point out to our national listeners, your reference to the Dolans there is turning the blade and the owners of the New York Knicks at Madison Square Gardens.
Yes, indeed. I mean, they have to sit and watch people like Jeremy Lin go on to have careers somewhere else, and the players that they invested in are basically falling apart and unable to play together. But that's just bad judgment at the top.
Call the World Series before we go.
In this day and age, I don't know if the Red Sox can do it again. When the shuffling is done, I'd like to see Detroit win. Of course, it's too late for Leland. I'm rooting for all the old Northeast Rust Belt towns, and I was rooting for Cincinnati and Pittsburgh last year.
So was I.
Well, yeah. I mean, they've been around forever, and they played my Brooklyn Dodgers back in the day. But one of these years, I'd love to see the Ohio River back in the World Series.
Pittsburgh Pirates reminds me of Wilbur Stargell and makes us both seem like a couple of old guys talking about sports here.
Clemente, my friend Bill Robinson, yes, I'm all for the Pirates coming back.
George, have a great year, won't you?
Have a good year. We'll be watching Putin and everybody together.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks, man.
The legendary George Vesey is contributing sports columnist with the New York Times and author of the forthcoming book, 8 World Cups, My Journey Through the Beauty and Dark Side of Soccer. George Vesey is pulling for Detroit to win the World Series in 2014. What are you looking forward to? Nicholas Hockenberry, possibly my nephew, says, I'm looking forward to an even-numbered year. The odd ones consistently throw me for a loop. That sounds like Nick. Ross Michael Octavian Acerbi says, I have to say 2013 has been the best year of my adult life. I finally feel pulled from the 2008 sinkhole. You know, I think a lot of people probably shared that experience in 2013. What are you looking forward to in 2014? 8778MYTAKE. Send us a tweet at The Takeaway. There you go. The year's already started off pretty well. Happy New Year, folks, from all of us at The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia. And the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable developments in communities across the country.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.